Good morning, everyone. I'm Ann Wyatt, Vice Chair, filling in for Chair Shaw, who's absent today. And with that, I'd like to call this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. And if the clerk will please call the roll.
Yes, good morning. Commissioner Viacana?
Here.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Avila?
Here.
And Chair Wyatt?
I'm here. Thank you. We'll do the flag salute if everyone will please stand. Before we get into our planning staff updates, it's time for public comment. Is there anyone here with any comment on items not on the agenda?
No request to speak.
No request to speak. Anyone want to pop out from a back corner? Okay, nope. With that, we'll close public comment and we will move to planning staff updates. Sir.
Good morning, Vice Chair Wyatt. Eric Hughes, Division Manager of Current Planning, here to provide the Commission with an update of recent Board of Supervisor actions of Commission interest and a preview of your upcoming schedule. But before I do, I would just like to announce again, planning staff would like to inform members of the public that there is an active phishing campaign impersonating the County Planning Department and Planning Commission. They are requesting payment of approval fees via wire transfer. So please remember the county does not request wire payments and official emails come from, you'll see, at co.slo.ca.us addresses. If you or your clients receive a message like this, do not reply or send funds. Instead, please forward the email to Eric Vitale in the District Attorney's Office at evitale@co.slo.ca.us and reach out to the Department of Planning and Building to confirm any payment or correspondence. Thank you. All right, moving on to the board updates. We just have one item from December 16th. There was a hearing to consider the annual review of the county growth rate for new dwelling units for calendar year 2025. Establishment of a growth rate for calendar year 2026, an amendment to the growth rate ordinance Title 26 of County Code for consistency with county housing objectives and to encourage housing production. The board approved this hearing item 4-1, and it also included the removal of the growth cap for all areas of the county except for the community of Los Osos. Moving on to your upcoming schedule, your next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting is January 22nd. We have several items that day. The first is a hearing requested by Bonaire Investments for a development plan coastal development permit, CDRC 2023-00032, and a condominium parcel map to construct a 12-unit hotel condominium project. That project was also on today's agenda, so we're recommending continuance to the next Planning Commission meeting. The second item is a hearing to consider a request by Willow IOS Group LLC for a development plan coastal development permit CDRC 2025-00023 to allow for the phased development and operation of an outdoor storage yard and wholesale trade establishment. That proposed project is within the industrial land use category and is located at, I'll give you the APN, 091-195-001. It's accessed via an existing private lane off Highway 1 within the Calendar Garrett Village Reserve line. The next item is a hearing to consider a request by Norgrove Gardens LLC for a conditional use permit to allow the phased construction of a new winery and distillery facility with a shared tasting room, special event program of up to 20 events per year with 150 guests, use of an existing tram to provide wine tasting and public tours of the vineyard, and also use of exterior use areas and other infrastructure. The project is located about 1 mile southeast of the city of Arroyo Grande at 2449 Brady Lane in the South County Inland Sub area of the South County Planning Area. Next item is a hearing to consider a request by Green River Mutual Water Company for a conditional use permit and variance to construct an interconnection pipeline along a bridge on River Grove Drive to connect the west area of Estrella River back to the remainder of the Green River Mutual Water Company and their water distribution system. This variance request is to reduce the front setback standards from 25 feet to 12 feet for 39 feet of this project's frontage. The project is located within the public facilities land use category in the Shandon Carrizo subarea of the North County Planning Area. The last, two more. The next is a hearing to consider a request by David Crabtree for a phase tentative tract map, also known as the River's Edge Development, and conditional use permit NSUB 2022-00047 to subdivide an approximately 43-acre parcel into a cluster subdivision plan unit development consisting of 181 residential parcels of varying sizes and housing types, also including 3.8 acres of commercial development, two utility parcels, and approximately 12 acres of park and open space for a total of 190 parcels. The project is located on the bluff overlooking the Salinas River at 3000 Indian Valley Road near the intersection of North River Road and Cross Canyon Roads in the community of San Miguel. The last item is a hearing to consider a request by Colin Wyrick for a vesting tentative tract map NSUB 2024-00077 to subdivide a vacant approximately 15-16 acre parcel into six residential lots ranging in size from 2 to approximately 4.6 acres. The project is located within the community of Templeton on the north side of Championship Lane, approximately 800 feet west of Theater Drive and just west of US Highway 101 in the community of Templeton. That concludes staff's updates, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Hughes. Any questions for staff? We got questions for staff? Okay. With that, we'll close the planning staff updates and move it along to commission business. We have a little bit of business here at the beginning of the new year to elect a chair and a vice chair. So what ideas do people have, or do I hear a motion?
I would be happy to make a motion to nominate Ann as the chair and Mike as the vice chair, if you guys are willing to step up for those roles.
I'll second the motion, as long as you don't beat me outside.
So thank you for that motion. I'd be happy to remain in the position of vice chair. Some outside conflicts are going to mean I'm going to miss the meetings this year. So I don't think it makes sense for me to be in the chair role and create some challenges. So I would hope maybe the motion maker may amend it to either nominate Commissioner Lieberman for chair and Commissioner Avila for vice chair, or some other change there.
I'd be fine with Ann staying as vice chair and Steve as the chair.
that sound good to you? Are you willing?
Yes.
Is the motion maker willing to change his motion?
is that good? Yeah, I'm willing to change the motion.
Okay. So I hear a motion on the table then to nominate Commissioner Lieberman as our chair, and I would remain as vice chair for this coming year.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
And Chair Wyatt?
Yes. So with that, we'll take a brief moment to switch positions right now, because we have a new chair. Welcome, Chair Lieberman. And thank you for taking this on. And I will have some new place possibly on this dais. So I'm going to pick an empty chair. I'm going to sit over there in a different position than I have.
Meeting up here. All right, picking up business. We've taken care of commission business. We're now going to move towards the consent agenda. We have two items. We have the Planning Commission meeting minutes of September 25th, and we have the Planning Commission meetings of minutes of November 13th. Is there any discussion on the items, or clerk, do we have any communications regarding these items?
No request to speak on the consent agenda. But if you could formally open and close, that would be amazing.
Open and close public comment. Yes, thank you. A little rusty. At this time, I'd like to open public comment regarding these two agenda items, these Planning Commission meetings. If anyone would like to come forward, please do so. Seeing no one approaching the dais, we will go ahead and close a public comment on this item. I would like to entertain a motion for approval of the consent items.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Clerk.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
And Chair Lieberman?
Chair Lieberman, yes. Okay, so my understanding, based on staff, is we're going to continue hearing item number 6 to January 22nd. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And Chair Lieberman, we technically, because it was noticed, you would have to open public comment on the item and then entertain a motion on the continuance.
Wow. Is there any public comment on this item that we propose to move to January 22nd? Seeing none, clerk.
No request to speak.
I'll make a motion to continue to the next meeting for the Bonaire Investments.
I'll second.
Very good. And just to confirm, we are continuing to a date certain of January 22nd. Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt? And Chair Lieberman?
Yes. The next item is to conduct a hearing to consider a request by the Towers LLC for a conditional use permit and DRC 2025-00037 to allow the construction of a telecommunications and public utility facility consisting of a 70-foot monopine with 3 8-foot antennas, 3 4-foot antennas, 3 3-foot antennas, 3 RRUs, a 6-foot microwave, OVP boxes, et cetera, along with backup power. Like to have a staff report, please.
Yes, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building, presenting this item today. We have Planner Blake Molly, and in support, Supervising Planner Carrie Brown, and then myself, Eric Hughes.
Good morning, Chairperson Lieberman and members of the Commission. My name is Blake Molly. I'm the project manager with the Planning and Building Department. Today I'll be presenting a request by the Towers LLC for a conditional use permit, county file number N-DRC-2025-00037 for a wireless communications facility. The proposed facility is an unmanned wireless communications facility disguised as a 70-foot tall foam monopine. The wireless facility consists of 9 panel antennas, 3 remote radio units, and associated equipment, cabinets, and hardware, located within a 40 by 40 foot or 1,600 square foot lease area and surrounded by a 6-foot tall fence. The proposed project is located at 202 Easy Street, located approximately 780 feet east of the city of Paso Robles. I would like to mention that the Via Paseo Palms senior apartments are approximately 100 feet to the west of the project site. The parcel is located within the industrial land use category. Here we have an aerial image of the parcel. Please note the approximate project area is near the southwest corner of the parcel, outlined in yellow. Again, we see the Vio Pasea Palms Senior Apartments approximately 100 feet to the west of the project site. In this slide, we're looking at the proposed site plan with the lease area outlined in green. In this slide, we're looking at the proposed northern elevation on the left and the proposed eastern elevation on the right. Here's an expanded view of the proposed equipment area. Please note the location of the proposed 1,600 square foot lease area outlined in yellow, the faux monopine outlined in green, and the equipment cabinets outlined in blue. In this photo simulation, you're looking at the faux monopine wireless facility as viewed from Easy Street looking southwest. And similarly, here the proposed facility is seen from Marquita Avenue, looking to the northwest. And here's an eastern view of the proposed facility as seen from Ramada Drive. In this slide, we see two propagation maps. The green represents good coverage inside a building, yellow represents good coverage in a vehicle, and red represents good coverage when on the street. On the left is a map that shows the existing coverage within the area, and the propagation map on the right now shows what the coverage will be if the proposed facility is approved and constructed. The proposed wireless facility has generated multiple comments from the neighbors in the project vicinity, including a petition signed by 12 residents expressing concerns about potential health and environmental impacts related to the proposed 5G coverage. Under the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, the county is not permitted to consider the effects of radio frequency emissions when evaluating a communications facility. However, staff does verify that the radio frequency emissions meet the applicable FCC standards for public exposure. This facility has been deemed to comply with these FCC standards. The project is exempt under CEQA, and a notice of exemption has been prepared and is included in the staff report. I would like to note for the record that a memorandum was submitted to the commission yesterday to revise the conditions of approval at the request of the applicant. Staff has reviewed the request and is supportive of those changes. At this time, staff is recommending approval of this conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the revised conditions listed in Exhibit B. If you should have additional questions, staff is happy to assist. And joining us today is Samantha Herman, here on behalf of Assurance Development. They're the agent for the Towers LLC and Verizon Wireless. This concludes staff's presentation. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Does the commission have any initial questions of staff?
Is the applicant going to make a presentation or not necessarily?
I believe they will, yes.
Okay, then I'll hold my question till after then. Thanks.
Does the representative want to come forward and share some information? Thank you.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Samantha Herman. I am with Assurance Development on behalf of the Towers LLC. And I just want to thank the commissioners and the chair for taking the time to review and consider our project today. And I also want to thank Mr. Molly for the presentation. I'll keep my talking brief, and then I'm here to answer any questions you may have since he did cover much of the project. The Towers LLC is a tower company that develops telecommunications infrastructure for all major wireless carriers across the United States. And currently, we are proposing to install a new 70-foot wireless tower designed as a faux pine tree located at 202 Easy Street. And the antennas will be mounted on the proposed tower. The equipment will be located at the base of the tower enclosed in the lease area in a 6-foot tall fence. And this site was chosen based off of community coverage needs and coverage gap, significant gap in coverage in this area of Templeton and Tin City along Highway 101, and it would primarily address poor and spotty coverage located in this area and the surrounding communities. It is designed as a pine tree, and this was determined to be the design that would be the least intrusive in this area due to the surrounding environment and the existing tree canopy and the industrial zone that it's located in. And it would contribute to the quality of the area's overall infrastructure and would ensure that network coverage services are adequately met. It's expected to improve communication needs and enable the public and first responders to swiftly respond in the case of any natural or man-made emergency. And it would be designed to be a co-locatable structure to reduce the number of future facilities in the area. And the intent for this co-location is evident on the zoning drawings provided, and as Blake shown in the elevations of the project. Applicants did also thoroughly assess and disqualify co-location opportunities on existing infrastructure, and seeing as none was found, we did determine that the proposed location was the best location for the proposed facility due to its available space and location within the industrial zone on an already developed property. And we did also, with the application, submit an electromagnetic emissions report, which does show compliance with FCC guidelines. And as applicant representatives, we have worked closely with staff and Mr. Molly to ensure that the site and its proposal meet jurisdictional requirements maintained by the county, as well as the federal government. And it's for these reasons we would like to request the commission's approval for the proposed tower. And I do thank you for your time and consideration and assistance throughout this process. And again, I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Why don't you stay put for a moment? I'm going to come back to the commission and again ask if there's any questions for staff or the agent.
Is that right? So you said you actually looked at other possibilities of co-location, but did you guys look at any other, because that is a relatively large industrial area, kind of where you're looking right now. Did you look at any other locations that weren't as close to the residential structure there? There's obviously a lot of industrial uses. That's kind of one of the only residential uses in that area, and it seems like putting it right there is an interesting choice.
Yeah, we did assess multiple alternative site locations and various parcels within the surrounding area. We did submit an alternative sites analysis with the application. This location was chosen due to both willing to lease and the accessibility to power and utility and just the coverage objectives as well to meet the best coverage and meet the coverage gap that was provided by RF engineers.
So there were no other sites that were willing to lease, or was this just the site that was made the most financial sense?
It is due to RF coverage objectives and accessibility to utilities. But there were multiple property owners that were not able to commit to a lease for this facility as well.
Okay.
Blake, can you put the graph back up of the detail that shows the rad centers for the antennas and then the proximity to the residential housing or the care center? Yes, my question is how far, what's the rad center, the lowest antennas, and then what is the distance from that, from those antennas to the actual houses or the, I don't know, the apartments, I guess, care center? Anybody, do you know?
The distance from the rad center to the?
Well, from the center, from the lowest antenna to the, well, what's the height, what's the rad center for the lowest antennas? You have a graph
so
on that?
As currently proposed, the rad center of the Verizon wireless antennas, which would be the anchor antennas on this facility, would be at 61 feet. The lowest antennas, which are not currently in like confirmed agreement, would be 38 feet.
Yeah, that's about right. And then that building's a two-story building?
Two or three, is it? I don't know.
The apartment building's two stories?
I'm unsure.
And then do we know the distance between?
Between the
Yeah, my concern would be the EME for that. I mean, if that rad center is 38 projection, I mean, what's the antenna configuration going to be there? Is there anything to be shooting back towards the building, or is everything shooting away from the building?
It would.
Even if there's not a proposed co-locator on the bottom, they're going to be there eventually. So is there going to be any restriction on how those antennas are formatted?
I don't believe there's going to be any sort of restriction for co-location on this site.
The applicant would be willing, if the commission would want to make that a condition on the project, it could be implemented as a condition to put restrictions on this antenna array.
I believe there was a diagram in the graphics package that showed a distance of 100 feet from the site to the senior facility. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's to the wall?
Yes.
It's not very far.
No, my house is my lot's 150 feet deep. I'm just thinking of comparisons, and that puts this within the depth of my relatively small lot. Yeah. Along the lines of questions, so I guess just setting this, the Federal Communications Act prohibits us from, you know, making a decision that results in effective prohibition of services. But it gives us discretion to the potential to move this around. Did we get the alternatives analysis in our package? And somehow I didn't read it. Did anybody look at that? Because I think that's key here. We're in an industrial zone with lots of areas away from houses. I'm not convinced, or I haven't seen anything that convinces me there wouldn't be a variety of options that would allow us to place this without precluding services.
Be nice to be at least 300 feet.
Right.
I mean,
so
at that height.
I'm that's not a question, that's kind of into discussion. So maybe we should hear public comment and see how we go there.
Well, let me just ask staff, do we have graphics or information on alternative sites in that area or alternative sites on this parcel?
We do have an alternatives analysis that was submitted as part of the application packet. It's not in the graphics here on the slides, but we can get that pulled up and share it with you guys.
All right, let me buy you some time, and let's go ahead and open public comment if we're done with questions for now. And
I do have printed copies of the alternative sites analysis if you'd like to see it, but staff is also, no worries.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, appreciate it. Public comment is open. If you'd like to come forward and comment on this item, please do so. We have speaker slips over to the side of the dais.
And sir, after you conclude your comments, we'll have you complete a speaker slip.
If you could just state your name and the area that you reside in for the record, please, and go ahead.
My name is Pat McCaffrey. I reside in Atascadero, but I work directly adjacent to this proposed tower. And I know when we developed the adjoining property at 212 Easy Street, there was a concern on being in a flood zone, and I'm first curious to know whether or not any analysis has been done in that regard. Is the tower in a flood zone, 100-year flood zone?
You know what, go ahead with your comments and we'll ask staff to come back and
well, I'm just being adjacent to this thing, and I appreciate all your comments. Very thoughtful, but I'm not really comfortable with this thing going in right next to where I work. And I know you're talking these federal laws and federal communications that don't allow you to consider those types of things. So I'm just objecting, I guess, on potential health hazards. I see the building where the residences that you have discussed. It is a two-story building. I heard this gentleman here saying that there were some potential changes to the proposed tower. I can't recall his name. I don't think we've heard those today. And I guess that's all I have to say.
I appreciate your comments, and we will be talking through this analysis, so you'll be able to hear it.
Hi, my name is Jordan. I work also next to where this is potentially going to be placed. My mother owns the lots to the west and to the north. We were also received letters as far as potentially putting this to those lots that you also saw on that map. We turned that down due to our own health, concerns. We have bees there. The area is a lot more densely populated than you would think. There's probably more people working in this area that would be exposed to this than in a residential area. There's, some of these places of work have, 15, 20 employees per building that are there all day. So it's not like this is an industrial zone that's like in the middle of nowhere. This has got more people and affects more people than if you were to put it, anywhere other than like a school or a hospital. There's 110 units next door, and we've talked to many of them, and most of them don't know that this is going in. Never read that letter that was sent out, and are opposed to it. Almost every single person that we've talked to has been opposed to it. So I guess that's just my comments for, not wanting this right next to me and where I live.
Appreciate it. If you could make sure to fill out a speaker slip, the clerk would truly appreciate that. Anyone else for public comment?
Yes, thank you for hearing my comments. I own at 212 Easy Street. My husband and I bought that back in a very long time when we had easement splits when we bought it. This tower has to come across my easement. I realized probably they didn't have to come to me and ask me about that, but I think it would have been a good idea. I received that letter, as my son said, but I consider myself a good neighbor, not thinking that my other neighbors would want a cell tower in my yard, in their yard. Elena Thompson was supposed to be here today. I don't know why she hasn't come, but I spoke with her. She received her letter. She had no idea what it was until I told her. I think for the average person, and especially an elderly person, they're opening up a letter, if they even got it, because believe me, there's only 12 signatures on there, but there's 110 people there. They have either not received letters, told me they've had problems with mail because there's been a management shift. And, I would ask the ones that I talked to, did you get a letter? No. Did you get this letter? I showed them the letter I had. No, I didn't get anything like that. I found one or two that had gotten the letter but did not understand what it meant. They didn't understand it was a cell tower. They're not even really sure how they feel about cell towers, but as a moral question, I ask you, I have loved ones that work there. It's a family business. We're not moving, but now we have to worry about protecting ourselves from what the FCC says is allowable health risk. I ask you, we've lived without cell phones before. We've operated. We have internet.
I'm sorry, if you could just wrap up your comments. We're past the 3 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But I have talked to the owner next door, and if I had realized that they were doing this, I would have approached them. I think the whole reason why that this tower is going in where it's going in is because she's the only one that would accept that, and she needed the money, and she has done it against the will of anybody else in the neighborhood. So.
Appreciate your comments. Anyone else? Look, do we have any additional correspondence?
We received correspondence that has been uploaded to the item, but no additional from what has been posted.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the Planning Commission. Staff, do you have any additional responses or information you wish to share based on the public comment and the questions asked?
Yes. While the parcel does have a 100-year flood zone coming through it in the southeast corner, it's not touching the proposed wireless facility site.
Okay. Let me just ask this of you. We did receive the alternative sites analysis hard copy, and I know there's concerned folks that are here today. Can staff or the representative walk us through perhaps even this slide and just kind of go through the alternative site analysis so the public is aware of the actions that were taken?
Yeah. Verizon Wireless considered three alternative locations for the proposed facility to meet coverage and service objectives for the area. Certain lines of sight were considered during facility siting, and few locations were initially considered adequate. Nearby parcels, I'll give some APNs, 040-143-027, parcel 040-154-001, and a third parcel 040-145-005. All had desirable traits that were ultimately rejected during the negotiations, despite property owner interest. The proposed site was ultimately chosen during negotiations for adequate space for the facility structure and associated utility equipment. Additionally, the site would be less visually intrusive based off of surrounding properties and uses. This site had adequate setbacks from the public roads and adjacent properties and met the technical needs of the coverage objective.
Thank you for sharing that information. I'd like to bring it back to the commission for any deliberation. Who'd like to start?
I'm going to turn to you, Ben, again. I know we have kind of our hands tied on some of these issues, but if we feel that there would be a better location for something like that, is that something we can ask them to go back and continue negotiations, or can we reject that based on that? What would be our options?
Yeah, Ben North, County Council's office. So the way this works is there's kind of a shifting of burdens. And first, the applicant has to establish that there's a significant gap in coverage and that the site that they've chosen is like the least intrusive way of addressing that gap. Once they've established that, then the county can rebut that. We need to rebut it based on substantial evidence. So absent substantial evidence, we would need a willing applicant to kind of work with us to relocate that, which is kind of, we've had that experience in the past with other applicants where they're willing to look at alternative sites. So that's kind of where we are today, probably. I haven't seen any real discussions, substantive discussion about alternative sites and what might be feasible. So.
So I guess I would ask the applicant, would there be a willingness to go back and see if we could find an alternate site that might not be as close to the residential structure?
If you could come forward, please.
Well, it looks like site one was, according to the RFEs, was the best site to be at anyway, which puts it considerably away from the residential homes, or not homes, but care facility. I don't know.
So why don't we take Commissioner Villicana's question first?
Yeah, if the commission wishes, the applicant is willing to assess alternative locations and come back with those with an alternative.
Okay, that'd be great. Do you need a certain time frame? How would we work that? Would you like a date certain? Would you like just a continuance. I'm looking for direction here.
Sure. Just two comments. So first comment is, in the past, we've had applicants just look at alternative sites within the same parcel, so just moving the cell tower within that parcel. So that would be an option that could be a potential. And then I guess in terms of the continuance, I would defer to the applicant in terms of how much time she may need.
So how much time? We could just do an open-ended continuance, or if you want a date certain, I'm sure we could look at the clerk and say what dates we could fit something like this in.
So I think the applicant does want to address that the proposed location does meet the RF and FCC guidelines and the setbacks determined by the code. And so they do want to, they prefer to remain in the location that is currently proposed. However, I think the preference would be to a date uncertain.
Date uncertain?
I believe so.
I just join in here. I'm looking at the alternative analysis here for the first time on the fly, trying to read and listen, not very effectively at either. But if we look at alternative one's description on the last page, APN 0401-43027, so 219 Easy Street. So that's the number one I think you're referring to as well. I mean, the description says, our summary here is initial letter of interest was sent to the property owner and the property owner expressed interest. Due to leasing negotiations proceeding with the proposed candidate, this property was not selected. That does not rule out a potential for that property. And Commissioner Avila's pointed out that may be a better site away from workers and residents. So yeah, I believe it's fully within our purview to ask for a continuance and ask the applicant to continue negotiations for that site. And until they have some evidence that that's not a possibility, we're not restricting, you know, we're not effectively prohibiting the service. So I'm counsel, I think we're clear on that. So I think the question is whether we'd like to honor the applicant with a date certain or not a date certain, and to direct them to look at that site and potentially any others that may minimize impacts here that have been pointed out by several people.
So confirming you prefer a date certain?
A date uncertain.
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 Okay.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion to continue this to a date uncertain, and to Ann's point, that maybe to continue to look at site one and possibly other sites as well, and understanding that you guys do prefer the existing site, but you know, maybe if it does stay on the existing site, we can move it somewhere different on that parcel. So that's my motion.
And I'll second that.
Commissioner Avila? I mean, sorry, I pushed.
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chair Lieberman?
Yes. And Clerk, could we make this document available to the public?
It will be added to the administrative record, yes.
Great. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. Thank you.
Okay. And we passed a motion here, and I'm sorry, I blanked. But just for clarification on the question of noticing that's come up, in the case of noticing where we have this many residents within a close area in a multiple family apartment complex, I did want to respond to the note from a few people about whether they got notices or not. Of course, whether they understand them is another thing. But should everyone at that complex have received a notice? And somehow if there was an internal mail problem, that's not our problem? Just could you explain what happened there, what the normal procedure is?
Yeah, every resident within the multifamily dwelling was noticed. Notices went out to each individual unit there.
Okay, so if somehow there was a internal mail problem, that's something people who've pointed out may bring that to the attention of the complex management. Yeah.
Okay. Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. One other thing just to notice, it does go to the property owners, and so it would go to the address on file with the county. So if they have a different address on file, as far as like their ownership, it would go to that address. So just noting that sometimes that can cause a delay as well.
And kind of to add to that, I just pulled up the noticing labels for this project, and notices went out to owners within a 300-foot radius and occupants within a 100-foot radius. And looking at the labels, it did include residents that included unit numbers. So those were directly mailed, and they were just addressed to the occupant.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because I know there are some challenges both with distances, and it's important to understand the distinguishing between the owners of the units and renters who may be different in some cases. So appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Did you have something?
I just wanted to address the public speakers that we can't, you know, discuss the health issues, but as far as the floodplain, that's not kind of an issue either, because the carriers will just build the site up 30 inches on a foundation or get out just whatever elevation needs to be out of the flood. But sounds like it wasn't in a flood zone anyway, so I didn't want to think, you know, that we weren't listening. We heard you. And
thank you for that comment. All right, so we're going to continue this item to a date uncertain, and the clerk has asked for a 10-minute recess to allow setup for the next hearing item. So I don't know why I put these on, because I can't see that far, but we will be reconvening at 10:57 or 9:57, 10 a.m. 10 a.m., I'm told. All right, let's call this meeting back to order. Thank you, everyone, for allowing us some time. I'm going to ask the clerk to introduce the next item.
Gladly. Hearing item number 7 is a hearing to consider an amendment to the inland land use ordinance relating to the relating to the establishment of the followed land registry for the Paso Robles groundwater basin multi-benefit irrigated land repurposing, also known as MILR program. This is in Supervisorial District 1 and 2, and presenting today is Mr. Blaine Reilly.
Well, thank you, clerk. And staff, if you could introduce the item as well. The project team, I'm sorry.
Eric, my first radio. Building. presenting today, we have Blaine Reilly with the groundwater sustainability. Take it away, Blaine.
Thanks, Eric. The reason that my name is Blaine Reilly, I'm the director of groundwater sustainability for the county. And the reason that people have a hard time remembering that is I'm a department of one. And so I keep a pretty low profile, at least internally here. And thank you for the opportunity to present today. I'm going to give you a little bit. This will be the first time that I've been in front of this commission, and so I thought I would just give you a little brief kind of overview of what my role is with the county, what my responsibilities are, and then how they relate to what I'm going to talk about today. So again, the Director of Groundwater Sustainability, it was a department that was formed in 2021, and the reason that it was formed is under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, SGMA is what it's typically referred to. The groundwater basins within our county, the SGMA regulated groundwater basins within our county, had just were finishing the process of completing groundwater sustainability plans, or they're referred to GSPs. Those are really the roadmaps for each of our groundwater basins to comply with SGMA, which means that we have to have those basins sustainable with regard to groundwater conditions within 20 years of the time that the groundwater sustainability plan was submitted. We have 4 SGMA basins in the county. We also have 2 basins that are managed under court-ordered adjudications. Those we refer to as our 6 managed groundwater basins, and those are the basins that I serve as the county's representative in with regard to work related to groundwater management in each of those basins. So that's sort of like what my role is, what I do. And today I'm here to talk to you about some work that we're doing in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. It's our largest groundwater basin in the county. Obviously, I think you all know where it's at. It's in North County. It's a groundwater basin that DWR has considered to be in critical overdraft, and it also is under SGMA classified as a high priority basin. And so it's obviously it's a very important basin to us. It is in critical overdraft. The groundwater sustainability plan that we've developed and have approved from DWR, from the state, and are moving forward with implementation, laid out some alternatives for bringing the basin into its sustainable condition. And when I told you 20 years, we have until 2040 to meet the requirements of the law and have that basin in a sustainable condition. And that doesn't mean that we get to wait till 2040. The state wants to, and we want to show progress towards sustainability, to 2040, and we are. In the groundwater sustainability plan, again, that was our roadmap to sustainability. The in SGMA terminology, really the toolkit that we have to bring the basin into sustainability kind of gets thrown into two categories. We have projects and we have management actions. Those are the categories of really activities and initiatives that we can implement to bring the basin into sustainability. Projects are things that you probably would envision. They're infrastructure, right? They're pipes, they're physical infrastructure that would bring in this basin supplemental water into the basin. So what non-groundwater into the basin to help meet that overdraft. And when I say overdraft, we have on average annual conditions, we pump about 13,000 acre feet more out of the basin than is being recharged on average annual conditions, whatever that means. Luckily, this winter is looking like it's better than average. So those are projects. And then we also have management actions. That's our other side of the toolkit. And those are more programmatic. Those are in this basin, demand reduction initiatives. How do we get pumpers to reduce the amount of groundwater that's being pumped from the groundwater basin? The GSP identified alternatives in each of those categories. We started looking at both options several years ago, 4 years ago, I think. We looked at supplemental water. You know, it does bringing supplemental water into the basin, does it make sense? We looked at, we commissioned studies to look at options and scenarios to potentially use state water supplies to benefit the groundwater basin. Had a significant study completed to look at those and look at those options. We had a companion study to look at options to potentially use Lake Nacimiento water and to benefit the groundwater basin. We also worked with the City of Paso Robles and the San Miguel Community Services District to look at the options of bringing recycled wastewater into the basin for basin benefit. All of those technically could potentially be completed or implemented, but they're at this point in time, they're incredibly costly and they prove to be just not feasible for the near term. And when I say near term, you know, for the next decade, probably. So that left us with the other side of the toolkit, and that is the management actions. And one of the management actions that is identified in the groundwater sustainability plan is to implement a program where there would be a framework for growers that are interested to voluntarily reduce their irrigated footprint, voluntarily reduce the amount of groundwater that's being pumped from the basin. There's significant interest and a lot of support among the growers to do that. One of the reasons is that over the last 18 to 24 months, the economics in the agricultural industry have been impacted significantly. Paso Basin is dominated agriculturally by the wine grape industry. The demand for wine grapes is significantly lower than it was 2 years ago. There's economic pressure to reduce operating costs among the growers. And one of the ways to do that is to basically reduce the amount of irrigated footprint, because every acre that they irrigate costs them money, the power cost for pumping, the cost for, you know, for managing the fields, for harvesting and all that good stuff. So sorry to give you this long ramp up, but I think it will help you understand what it is that we're trying to get support for today. So one of the programs that was identified in the groundwater sustainability plan was to develop a voluntary pumping reduction program among the agricultural community. And the reason that that's important is about a little over 90% of the groundwater being pumped in the Paso Robles groundwater basin is being used for agricultural irrigation. So of the 40 some thousand acre feet of water that's pumped on an annual basis, 90% of that is being pumped for and used for irrigation. In the GSP, it was identified as a strategy to reduce pumping. Timing seems to be aligning with what our goals are. We started working about 3.5 years ago on a program, an initiative that we call the Multi-Benefit Irrigated Land Repurposing Program, or we refer to it as the Miller Program. There are similar programs within the state that are multi-benefit land repurposing programs. That acronym is MLRP. We didn't like that, so we added irrigated land. So we got Miller out of it. That's why we're a little bit different. We started working on that program, working in collaboration with all the GSAs. There are 5 groundwater sustainability agencies in the basin, their staff, their members, their stakeholders, as well as growers and other industry representatives. Started working about a little over, not quite 4 years ago, developing what the details of this Miller program would look like. And at the same, and it was initially, and it still is sort of on the books as a very sort of multifaceted program that would allow not only growers to repurpose their land, but provide support, both technical support, and potentially somewhere down the road, maybe even economic support for them to do that. But as we were working on that program over the last really 18 months, it was clear that the growers just really were more interested right now in finding a pathway that would allow them to follow land and do so in a way that would not put them at risk for losing their future right to plant or to extract groundwater. I have a slide deck that I'm going to go through here in a minute, but I think I'll just about end this setup. We've been working now for the last 18 months or so, developing what we're calling the initial phase of the Miller program, and that is the followed land registry. That is what I'm going to talk a little bit more about today. That's what we're hoping to implement in the near term. I'm talking, I think if everything goes well, we can deploy this program, this registry, in March. And the reason that timing is so critical is growers right now are making decisions about what are they going to plant and what are they going to follow this next season. So it's time critical. With that, let me just kind of go through the slide deck. I've covered some of the things in the slide already, in the deck already, but and before I get into it, because I'm not a planner, I'm a civil engineer and hydrologist, I'm going to refer to the what we're asking to amend is the ag, is a section of the ag offset ordinance, even though I know it's much bigger than that.
Stuart, one quick question.
So again, I'm going to go through a little bit. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, right here, Mr. Abbott.
One quick question, just so I got my head wrapped around this right. SGMA is the state jurisdictional body that the county is happen to adhere to, is that correct?
SGMA is a law, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, that was enacted in, I think, 2013 or 2014. So it's a law, and it really set the, it was precedent setting, because we didn't have anything like it in the state prior to the enactment of that law. And it's a law that requires all groundwater basins within the state to be brought into a sustainable condition over a set period of time. And there's very specific methodologies that are laid out, reporting requirements and things like that, but it is a law.
Okay, and that's, and then your department is tasked with getting the county in cohesion with that law.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Okay. I'm just going to go through a little bit of background and talk about the registry. What is it? Why do we need it? How is that? What is the nexus between that and the ag offset ordinance amendment that we're proposing? We'll talk a little bit about, you know, the engagement that we've had with the grower community, and then I'm going to pitch our recommended action. So I went through this already, but again, the basin's in critical overdraft, 90% of the groundwater is for agriculture. Agriculture in Paso Basin, as you all know, is dominated by wine grapes. Fallowing is needed to reduce irrigated acreage. It's already happening to some extent, but we think we can significantly increase the amount of acreage being fallowed if we can get this registry up and running. And this would provide growers to voluntarily follow their irrigated property. Why? I've kind of laid this out, but it's SGMA. It's mandated. It's a law. I don't think I really need to get into. I think I covered that already. The Miller program, which the registry is the initial phase of the Miller program. We hope to roll out other phases of the Miller program over time, if it seems appropriate and supported by the grower community. But the intent is that we will reduce groundwater demand by repurposing land to less water intensive uses, including fallowing. Initial phase will be the registry that we're talking about today. And the incentives is to really the incentives that we're hoping to provide the growers are some exemptions from existing restrictions within some regulations to allow that to happen. We're encouraging, this would encourage voluntary fallowing. One of the things that's important that our ability to monitor and confirm that in fact fallowing is happening and what is the impact of that. We're using satellite-based evapotranspiration data. It's not a new technology, but its application to the agricultural sector is relatively new, and we're using that to monitor and verify that in fact properties that are proposed to be fallowed are in fact fallowed and what the impact of that is to the basin. Let's see. The registry will be administered by my department, the Groundwater Department of Groundwater Sustainability. Landowners will voluntarily enroll through an online portal that's currently under development. We will do an annual review based on satellite-based ET data, which we have currently access to. And if a property is enrolled but proves not to be compliant, they'll be removed from the registry and the protections that are afforded them by being enrolled. Let's see, the offset ordinance amendment, I think you're probably well aware of that one, but that is restricts the new and expanded irrigated crop production that would increase, and growers must apply to replant within 5 years. And the 5 years is really one of the key things that we're talking about today. We call it the 5-year look back period. Right now, if a grower follows, say they've got a 500 acre vineyard and they follow 100 acres, under current conditions, current regulations, current ordinance, if they don't replant that 100 acres that they followed within 5 years, they effectively lose their future right to replant that, like indefinitely, as long as the ag offset ordinance is in place. With the amendments that we're proposing today would provide relief and an exemption from that 5-year look back period if somebody enrolls in the registry and meets the requirements, the eligibility requirements. This is the 5-year look back. I kind of just went through that. The recommended amendment, we would provide an exemption for fallow lands that are enrolled in the registry. And this is the In the packet, what we're proposing is a little bit different. I think we're basically just changing in what's proposed in the packet, and what we're proposing is we're just replacing the word water demand with consumptive water use, and then there's additional unless allowed by an agricultural offset clearance or exemption. Those were recommended by planning, and I think the industry growers support that recommendation. So that's what we're proposing today, that amendment. I do want to point out that, you know, again, I've mentioned we've been working with the growers for the last 4 years to kind of get to this point. We've done a lot of outreach, a lot of meetings. We've been meeting continuously with members of each of the GSAs, the five GSAs in the basin, met with Wine Country Alliance, met with Independent Grape Growers Association, met with the Farm Bureau, lots of other. I've done lots of lunch meetings over the last 4 years to discuss what we're doing in the basin. And I think we did receive a letter of support from the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance that I think you probably is included in your packet. And with that, I'm going to ask that you consider our recommended action, which is recommended that the commission recommend to the Board of Supervisors that the amend the inland land use ordinance related to the establishment of the Fowler Land Registry for the Paso Groundwater Basin Miller Program with the requested modifications. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any initial questions?
I got one, and this probably isn't directly for this, but you might be the guy to answer this because this is perplexing to me. So the county in general has a water issue overall, and we approve wineries to be put in the last few years. So that's a yes, pumping a lot of water. Then we tell people that have 25 acres they can't split their lot because we don't have enough water. And then now we're also being tasked to build 3,000 new homes in the county, and we have plenty of water. I'm really confused on this water situation. I mean, it seems like we have it one day and we don't the next. And that's can you explain any of that? I'm not asking you to.
Well, just remember that my perspective is one of groundwater management. So, right. So I advocate for the health of the groundwater basin. Right. And we'll talk, let's just talk about the Paso Robles groundwater basin. The Paso Robles groundwater basin is a very, very large ground area. It's 400,000 acres. It's not just one big bowl of sand that's filled with, you know, partially filled with water. There's a lot of variability in the conditions within the groundwater basin. Some areas are, quite frankly, quite healthy and really probably don't need to be, there doesn't really need to be much concern with regard to the sustainability of those areas. And some areas are not at all. I mean, some areas, you know, we're at risk of having domestic wells. We've had domestic wells go dry in certain areas of the basin, and we're still at risk until we make some more progress in sustainability. So that's my perspective. But, you know, as you know, the county and other jurisdictions within that basin, not only the county, but the city and San Miguel and all, you know, they have other priorities, right? So I don't have a good answer for you. I can just give you my perspective. And my perspective is to do everything I can to protect the health of the basin.
Mike, I might just chime in there. Mr. Greeley did point out that agriculture uses 90% of the water on this basin. So if we're talking about kind of impacts from use, I mean, our agriculture has an impact at 9 to 1 of housing and residential, everything else. So it's really the biggie. So if we're talking about housing impacts, that's, you know, a fraction of the, of a fraction. So I mean, that's why that what we're hearing today is important. And it varies probably over every basin, but it's probably not that different depending on the basin.
OK, Okay. Anyone else with brief questions?
Okay, I did. I had a question that fits in that category clearly of question. I thought I understood this fully. But what I think I understand is that we're basically creating more flexibility or expanding the five-year look back to, I don't know, maybe perpetuity if people are on the Fallowed Lands Registry. But I didn't see that in the changes that you showed us. I only saw changes to kind of water consumptive from water demand. So I presume that's what we're doing, and we just didn't see that in the redlining. I'm pretty sure that's what I saw in the documents I read.
Yeah, that's correct. If a grower enrolls their farming unit in the program, then it's a voluntary enrollment. So long as they're enrolled in the program and performing in accordance with the following requirements, then they are afforded the protections that this amendment offers. Because it's a voluntary program, if they then decide they want to come out of the program, then they are no longer afforded those protections. There is no set time frame. They can enroll and stay in it as long as they want or as short as they want. It's just those protections are only provided so long as they're enrolled in the program and performing.
Right. Okay. And you just didn't happen to show us in a limited slide presentation those changes to the ordinance?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was clear to everyone, since some snippet of change was shown, but not others. Yep. Okay. Thanks. My only question.
Thank you.
So the program, it's voluntary. So what's the benefit to the farmer to be in the program versus not being in the program? You're talking about there's protections. Are you having a problem getting farmers to enroll, or are you getting plenty of enrollment? What's the?
Well, the registry will be hopefully deployed in March. So, but we're getting plenty of interest. I'm getting calls almost every day now. When's it going to be live? When can we enroll? There's a lot of interest. And the reason that it's important, and these are the calls I've been getting over the last 4 years, is Blaine, I quit watering, I quit irrigating this field, you know, 4.5 years ago. My 5-year timeline is coming up. If you don't have something in place, I'm going to turn my pumps back on. I'm going to irrigate, even though I'm going to lose, it won't be profitable. I'm going to lose money, but in order to protect my future right to plant, I'm going to turn them on. And that's what we're trying to, you know, alleviate, because there are folks that right now would turn their pumps off.
So is that essentially the only protection, is that getting to refarm that land 10 years down the road, or is there other things involved?
That's one of the big benefits. The other benefit that we're providing, and I mentioned the satellite-based ET, this is really sophisticated stuff. You know, it's basically the eye in the sky, but we have resolution down, you know, to an acre. We can tell, for our purposes, we can tell what's happening with regard to consumptive water use, you know, at that scale. But that information is also really valuable to a farmer for farming practices and making decisions about how to optimize their, you know, their farming practices and optimize their irrigation. They're going to be enrolled farming units will be that data we're going to make accessible to them. If you enroll, you get that access to all that information, and that's going to help you, we believe, and they say, and they agree, that's going to help you make better decisions, you know, to be more efficient with regard to water and other elements of your farming practices. So that's a benefit. There's another benefit that would be that the Board of Supervisors is going to consider with regard to protections under the Williamson Act. And those, we got the support of the Agricultural Lands Preservation Commission. Yeah, I've only been in front of them once too, but they were supportive of that part as well. But those are really that's what we're offering, you know, as our, you know, as a assistance or a benefit, I guess.
So a couple questions. Out of curiosity, so you mentioned the economic impact of, in the industry right now. So I think last year it was something like 40,000 acres in California basically were torn out. What are we seeing in the Paso Robles Basin, and how is that affecting, you know, our overdraft? Because just kind of quick math, it sounds like we're about 30% over what our use is.
Yeah, something like in the 20s, yeah, 20, something like that. So what we started trying to quantify, because growers are fallowing right now and have been over the last 18 months, I think. So we've been tracking that, based on the most recent analysis over the last 12 months, or from last growing season to this growing season, we think in the Paso Basin, we're probably in the 2,000 to 3,000 acres that over the last, between one growing season and the current that we just came out of, about 2,000 to 3,000 acres have been fallowed. We expect that could potentially be doubled, maybe even tripled. And if that happens, we're getting pretty close to sustainability.
Okay, and then, so this is, like you were saying, that people are thinking about turning their water back on because they're in that 5-year look back period. So this is grandfathered. So like somebody who has already fallowed their land, then if they enroll in this program, that just goes into perpetuity. It's not looking forward. It can look back as well to people that have already fallowed in the past.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Yep. How does it affect people that haven't planted but have property? Does it affect people that have just raw agricultural land at this point? Are they able to enroll in the program and get any sort of protections?
No, this is, you know, the registry and the Miller program is intended to repurpose recently, you know, relatively recently irrigated property. So if it's never been irrigated or hasn't been irrigated in the recent past, it would not be eligible for enrollment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I just, the registry thing and the voluntary, I just, you know, that's, CARB did the same thing. We voluntarily registered our diesel vehicles over class 6 and above. So it was going to be voluntary, no big deal. The enticement was you're going to have this quicker registration because your vehicles are enrolled. Well, that morphed in about 2 years from voluntary to mandated. Now there's a fee. It's got to be done 4 times a year. I mean, it just, so that's the only problem when these things start voluntarily. Next thing you know, the farmers are going to be out there, you know, I don't know what would happen, but usually nothing good, except for saving water, maybe.
Which I guess we need. That's why we plan on the volunteers, you know, the enrollment stuff.
Okay, any other questions? It looks, mics are off. I'm gonna go ahead and open public comment on this item and ask the clerk if we have any speaker slips.
We do have one request to speak from Patricia Wilmore.
Good morning, Chairperson Lieberman and members of the commission. My name is Patricia Wilmore. I am here on behalf of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. You no doubt got our email supporting this motion today, and I want to affirm what Mr. Reilly has told you. The industry is primed and ready to register for fallowing. This is one of those rare occasions when you can say right idea at right time. I've thought of this process, which I've been involved in for about 3 years now, as kind of a funnel. You know, we started with this big picture Miller program, and there'd be many advantages to that. And then as we talked about it and as time went by, most of us came to the realization that what can we do now that will really make a difference? And this fallowing registry is exactly what we can do now to make a real difference. And I will assure you that this 5-year look back period has been an impediment. I have growers asking me, as a matter of fact, I had an email this morning from a grower saying, has it happened yet? You know, I'm keeping logs, I know my water usage, I'm ready to register, has it happened yet? And it's wonderful for me to say to these constituents, it's happening now, it's happening today. And I do ask you then to further this with your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. And I think we'll see those people. I'm thinking of some farming practices. You know, our area has become known for regenerative farming. There are 41 in the wine districts in the world who have regenerative farming, and we are 5 in the Paso Basin, 5 members of that. And we're very proud of our respect for the soil. Being able to fallow, perhaps you've taken vines out completely, and in 5 years, you may not be ready. You still may want to maintain soil health and do other things. So again, this has many opportunities in many ways. And of course, bottom line is meeting the requirements of SGMA and preserving this resource on which we rely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Clerk, anyone else? Anyone else for public comment that hasn't submitted a slip? All right, very good. I'm going to go ahead and close public comment at this point. Just staff, do you have any additional information to share based on questions or public comment?
No, I don't think so. I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and start some deliberation and comments on this item.
So if the 5-year restriction is the issue, I guess my problem is why do people have to register? Why can't we just remove that? Why do we have to have all the farmers register in an enrollment program? Because somebody's tracking something there besides water. Why can't we just remove the 5 years and let them start farming it in 6 years, 7 years? Why does it have to be registered land?
Well, this goes hand in hand with the management of compliance with SGMA and the management of the groundwater basin. So it's really, right now we have fallowing happening, but we don't know where it's happening. We don't know we've done some sort of independent analyses using the satellite-based ET because it was important to me to try to understand where it's happening, to what extent it's happening. But that's not good enough. We really do need to know definitively where lands are being fallowed, how long they're being fallowed, how those fallowed lands are being managed, so we can use that information to assess how that activity is impacting the health of the groundwater basin. So, I mean, for us, capturing that knowledge and then using it to better understand the conditions of the basin are what are critical to us.
So that the registration is state mandated, or is that something that the county's implementing? I don't think I understood your answer there. So are we being required to have the ranchers and farmers register, or is that something we've elected to do on the county side?
It is not a state mandate, no. This is something it's a county initiative that is supported by the groundwater sustainability agencies in the basin.
Okay. And then as far as the reduction, switching gears a little bit back to the knowing that 90% is ag, how are most of the vineyards watering? Are they subterranean or are they still overhead drips, or how are they watering the vines?
The vast majority are drip on drip. The irrigation efficiency in the drip systems in the basin is pretty high already. I mean, they do a very good job. There's very, very few overhead sprinkler type irrigations. Most of those are, you know, very small kind of family-owned operations. In most of the bigger, by the vast majority of the larger operations, and even the smaller are all on drip right now.
Is there any programs? So being a family of a walnut growers, there was grants from the state about 15 years ago. We went all subterranean and bought GIS equipment to track all the buried lines with our equipment. So we went and dig them up. Is there any programs that allow this? Because it was a significant savings in water, even over the drip that we previously had.
Absolutely. And in fact, when I was describing you know, the original concept of the Miller program, and I think it was, Ms. Willmore described it pretty well. The original concept, that top of the funnel, you know, included a lot of those sorts of initiatives that would be supported. We would provide support to the growers for that. It just turned out those are not off the table. The registry is the initial phase of the Miller program, and we're hoping that we can build, kind of reverse grow that funnel over time. And we do have, we're in discussions with the NRCS and the RCDs. They have some funding programs that may be available to do some of the things that you're discussing. And we're going to make, through the registry, that information available to the growers as well.
Okay. That's all the questions.
Anyone else?
I think just to follow up on your concern, it may help to illustrate the benefit for the program and the registry by describing, and I think we've heard examples that you get and Ms. Willmore has heard about concern and the potential for watering even a crop that's not going to be profitable to keep the rights. So maybe if we looked at, so right now, if I had some land fallowed and it's not on the list and 5 years comes, so say this is the fifth year and I'm facing year six in the spring. Now, would I not be able to replant them under our SGMA obligation or some kind of county ordinance?
Well, under the current ag offset ordinance, if you have not, if you had a field that was planted and irrigated, you know, say 5 years, 5 years and 1 day ago, right? And you haven't irrigated that field in that during that period, as of today, you no longer have the right to irrigate that field.
So, Commissioner Avila, I think that's kind of the answer to your, I think your kind of your question, that this is providing kind of a right by getting on the list to those people that now can't irrigate at 5 years plus a day, that by getting on the list, they can. So I understand your slippery slope kind of concerns about how it becomes more obligatory and troublesome, but this is really kind of providing a pathway to keep that right open for people that are about to lose it.
Or we could just remove it, let them serve farms. So the slippery slope is, in Keene County, they did the same thing. It was different, it wasn't a registry, but when you went to the grant to get the subterranean water, there's a lot of filters and stuff that have to go with that system. When pistachios, so with walnuts, it wasn't as demanding on water as pistachios. Pistachios were in a lot of problems because they take a high volume of water. If that system had any plugging and they weren't getting water, they'd have to switch back to basically hand irrigating with the tractor and a tank. The problem is when they start using more water, that's being tracked, and then they lost their overhead delivery through the canal systems because they weren't, you know, properly using the drip line or the other. So there's always something that's gonna, by registering and having monitoring, that's the part I don't like, because now we could, I know there's no overhead delivery with water here in this situation, but I mean, not being a farmer in this area, I don't know how you would, but it seems like we could just, and I understand you're saying you want them to register, you can track what's being saved and how it's being implemented, but, you know, I got a couple examples why we shouldn't be doing that.
Well, I get your challenge there, but we already are. The ordinance already mandates this and precludes the right to water at 5 years plus a day. So, you know, if you wanted to go back somehow, you know, there may be some pathway, but really all we're looking at today is giving kind of more right,
right,
for people to move forward and water and plant than they currently have. So, that's the small portion that we're looking at here. I understand the concerns, the challenges and monitoring, but that's already a requirement and not on in front of
us. No, it's not mandated. That's why it's not mandated that the registry be in place. We're just asking for it to be put in place.
Right, as a way, as a mechanism to allow 5 years plus a day watering that we don't otherwise have.
Or we could just not register and give them the 5 years.
Oh, I see. So you're okay. So you're suggesting the 5 years plus a day with no registry, just free for all. But how would we know who is planted in the past? Does that mean, I mean, that just opens the doors then for anybody if we're not tracking that.
Yeah.
And then we get into more water problems and more dry wells.
So if I could jump in before our subject matter expert, I thought Dias, jumps in. I'm following your train of thought because I keep saying, well, why does it have to be voluntary? Because it's an incentive to everyone who recently had dirt in production, right? There's no disincentive. So why do we even need this? But I get it, for the people that either have ag zoned land that haven't done anything with it, or it's been years and years and they have no intention of returning it. I could see why you'd want to be registered. I understand the one more thing of government regulation. I completely get that, but yeah, I just see it as, why isn't it a benefit to anyone who qualifies for it? And I'm gonna stop in.
Well, it's not the regulation part. It's in 3 years, we'll be having another discussion, which something was tracked and led into that, and it just keeps growing and growing. Is, you know, I'm thinking, why don't we just remove the 5 years, let them plant 6 years down the road? Why do we have to voluntarily register? Because it'll become a mandated registration, then it'll be, you know, somebody will be taxed on some, it'll just grow.
Yeah.
And now there's information there to let it grow.
I would think the concern, if you removed that 5 years, is you could all of a sudden have somebody who, you know, grew grain on their property 50 years ago probably start saying, hey, you know, why can't I start planting again? So I honestly think this, for the economics of the industry currently, you know, as a grower, I would be concerned about taking out a crop because I would be like, what if I can't plant it again? And so I think there are a lot of grapes in the basin that were probably watered this year that were not even harvested, but you were protecting those water rights. And I think as an industry, we need to come into balance. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to actually put in some sort of, you know, regulation that will help us, you know, get to that point where it's not just the water that we're going to be benefiting, but it's the economics of our industry that are going to benefit from it. So I think it's a great first step. And I think, as Ms. Wilmer said, the timing of this is perfect with the state of the industry.
Right. And I understand the five, you know, wanting to plan again. That's, I'm not opposed to that at all. I'm just opposed to the registration part.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to what Ann said, that, you know, at a certain point, then it's going to be, if we don't have that registry, you know, then people are going to have to, you know, save their records and pictures and everything else, where if we have a registry, it's going to be very easy to say, hey, look, I pulled this out in you know, 2026. And you know, so there is a clear record going forward, and it probably travels with the land, I'm assuming. So I am fully supportive of this change.
Any other deliberation or thoughts on this?
I'll just say I'm fully supportive as well.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
Yep. If you're ready. So I will go ahead and make a motion to recommend to the that we recommend to the Board of Supervisors to amend the Inland Land Use Ordinance relating to the establishment of the Fallowed Land Registry for the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Multi-Benefit Irrigated Land Repurposing Miller Program.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Clerk, would you have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Being opposed to the registration part, I'll still say yes.
So is that a yes or no?
Yes.
Very good. And Chair Lieberman?
Yes. Thank you.
Motion Thank you.
Carries. Thank you very much.
I'm just going to note, we're going to have a different conversation in a few years about this.
We'd like to. Let's agendize diesel.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. This concludes our agendized business. I will entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved. Second.
Voice vote. Aye.
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 Opposed. And how about a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting of January 22nd, 2026?
So moved.
Second.
Aye. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. None. Meeting's adjourned.
Well done.
Goodness.